Hello, lacrosse world. This is the In the Crease podcast. I am your host, Dan Abern, and I'm joined by Kyle Devitt. It is Tuesday, April 2nd, and after another big weekend of lacrosse on TV and all over, it feels almost like a second season as teams really get into the grinder of conference play and turn up the stakes on the whole year. Kyle, we are looking down the barrel.
Dan. My world is in shambles right now after the news that the MLL will be teams. But I want everyone to know, still here for the pod. I knew that I couldn't let down our listeners. And I also knew that I had to talk about some of the simply astonishing results from this past weekend before I set myself on fire, walk into the ML offices, and smolder for eternity.
Kyle, you would self-immolate for Major League Lacrosse. Damn. There's so many games to talk about this weekend. Let's maybe focus on one of the bigger upsets from Saturday. North Carolina 10, Duke 8. Kyle, once again, the IL Steph completely wrong, unanimously, in their picking Duke.
Yep. I mean, I feel like we can get to all the picks and stuff later because I actually got one right, and I'm really happy about it. But I feel like if you're a Duke fan, you're probably pretty perplexed by your team not hitting double digits for the last 2 weeks in a row. Like, should this worry you? I don't know if worry is the right word. I feel like it's just a cause for concern. There were times in this game where the engine of the Duke offense just simply, stalled out. Stalled out on the highway. The Tar Heel defense was indeed stout, so I don't want to take anything away from them. But, man, there were some head and record-scratching moments where the shot selection was more like a restless D3 team than a top-tier ACC squad, right?
Yeah. If you look at the last two results for Duke, it seems really out of character, especially after the resounding victory they put together against Loyola, a team which, by the way, has been on like a revenge tour since then, just absolutely bullying teams in the Patriot League. The Duke offense looks just so out of character. They don't seem to be capitalizing in transition, not getting as many quality looks. The attack looks a little dysfunctional. And then Donowski goes on the record and calls out the team, saying there isn't any single individual that is going out of their way to lead a team, and that the Blue Devils just aren't very good right now. Which is a little bizarre because it's always around this time that Duke has historically hit their stride, like right after spring break comes around.
Yeah, I think the team that's doing that this year is Penn, and we're going to get there eventually. But, going back to the game, North Carolina got a lot of great bounces and really outplayed Duke between the lines, something we haven't seen, since probably the High Point game. The Lions share the credit. We'll go to Caden Johnson, the Tar Heels goaltender, who made an incredible 21 saves here. And that's actually something I want to talk about because this was an incredible goalie performance in an entire weekend of incredible goalie performances. I think we might have an all goalie player of the week poll on Inside the Cross, later this week. But Johnson's effort was the chef's kiss of efforts all weekend, in my opinion.
Yeah, this was an interesting look from Carolina in this game. I feel like they made some bold changes just for change's sake, including starting all three freshmen on attack and Caden Johnson in net, which actually really paid off for them. 21 saves from Johnson, like you said, and then three goals from the freshman trio, including two from your man, B-Cam. It was a remarkable win that they needed to have, especially after last week. And it's, listening to Coach Bresci talk about that game on, Quint and Terry's podcast, sounds like they really did some soul searching after that Maryland calamity.
Yeah, definitely a tough weekend to be a Blue Devil across the board, right?
1 point, man. Everybody's bracket's dead out there.
Zion's going to the Knicks, and he's going to remake it. He's going to the Knicks. He's going to remake the entire franchise.
My Knicks, baby.
Great.
My Knicks and my Lakers are back next year. Let's go.
Wow. That's a really unexpected take from you, but let's move on.
Let's go to Notre Dame 13, Syracuse 10.
Important question for you.
Okay.
When did you know that Cuse wasn't going to finish the comeback, because I'm not sure I accepted it until the final whistle, such as my respect for the Orange.
To me, the turning point is clear as day. It's the Brett Kennedy cross check to the head. It absolutely cost Cuse the comeback. And it just,
I was being facetious.
And it just seemed so egregious and unnecessary in the moment. Otherwise, I thought Cuse came out a little flat, and maybe it was because it was their first road test. Like, who's playing their first road game on March 30th?
No one.
Yeah, the bad start was it was just too much to overcome, and the penalties down the stretch really compounded things. Other than that, yeah, I was really impressed with that comeback that they had. It's really hard to string that much momentum together for so long and come back, especially against a team like Notre Dame who's playing at home. But them capitalizing on the Kennedy penalty was what finally took the wind out of their sails.
Yeah, because they weren't doing anything until that point. They could barely hold on to the ball. Like, lots of uncharacteristic turnovers kind of opened the door for Cuse. I don't know if Cuse kind of did it themselves, really. I feel like, you know, Notre Dame kind of went to sleep and then woke up from that mid-up goal, and then it was over. You know, I really feel like it could have gone the other way, but, you know, one play can change an entire game, and that's what we saw here.
Kyle, the best league in lacrosse, the Ivy League. Another thrilling game in this one. Penn 13, Yale 12 in triple overtime. What did you think?
I got some news for the haters. Shout to all the mouth breathers that roasted us for our IG picks. Woo! You're so smart. Big day for you. In all seriousness, Penn is one of those teams that has figured out their identity at the perfect time of the season. They're going to run at you with minimal fear, maximum effort for 60 minutes. And that sounds like pretty simple as a concept, but in practice, I feel like it's a hard ask. I thought Kyle Gallagher in particular had a great day limiting the impact of TD Ierlin at the X. Maybe the most Herculean feat in college lacrosse right now is slowing him down. The numbers look relatively even with Yale getting that slight one-win advantage in draws, but Gallagher's ability to lengthen the time frame of the faceoff is really what impacted this game for the Quakers, in my opinion.
Yeah, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. I thought Gallagher, and just the fact that they drew it out and made it a 50-50 battle at points, was just really important here. I feel like Penn right now is low-key the funnest team to watch because they play elite teams week in and week out, and they have to win a shootout every time. Talk about this play where Tyler Dunn self-clears, then later on scores the equalizing goal with no time remaining and just a shooter's goal. That is a shooter's goal, man. He just says, I got to have it. He gets it. I love it.
Yeah, incredible. And also, you know, again, we're talking about all the great goalies. Reed Junkin, 21 saves. Here's the thing. Like, this is a great win for Penn, and I don't want to take anything away from them. But if you need your keeper to make 21 saves for you to win a game, that's not going to win you every game. Because goalkeepers aren't going to put up 20-plus saves every single game. It's just not feasible. I think we got a lot of upsets this weekend on the back of, you know, these amazing efforts from netminders. But if that's what we're kind of backing our team on, you're kind of betting your future on that, like, you're in for some trouble. So I think the Penn defense probably has a lot to answer for in the film room after this one, even though they won.
Yeah, but this team right now really looks like they know who they are. They probably need a little bit more contributions on the defensive end. I think they're mad that they were disrespected after going 0-3 and have now strung together five really good wins in a row, including this special result over the national champs. I put Penn at 5 this week in my poll. I think that's a well-deserved ranking. They're one of the best teams right now.
Yeah, I think they're around 10 in mine. I definitely raised them up. I mean, like, you know, you're still way up there. Listen, you still lost three games. And I know, like, there's this thing that happens with the poll around this time of year where people go best right now or best overall. And it sounds like I'm not, you know, criticizing you, like, you're going for best team right now. And that's fine. And I know a lot of people do that. I think I try to split it down the middle and take into account both things. Like, how do you vote? You know, I'm trying to think of a team that, you know, Marquette had a huge win and got into the top, like, 17 last week.
Yeah.
And I got beat this week. You know what I mean? It's hard to to do that because they had that three game stretch where they lost like Cleveland State. You can tell me all the you know, intangibles around that and guys getting, I don't care. Like, we're evaluating team by team, you know, and wins and losses are the easiest way, but you know, putting that into context is probably the hardest thing because you're trying to use context from earlier in the year, success earlier in the year, and success now. I mean, if you're rating teams on how they've adjusted and gotten better, Penn is definitely one of the teams that's up there. They've learned a lot from their mistakes, which is something I don't think you can say for a team like this. This is going to sound like a shot, but no shots. You can't say that about a team like Duke right now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. That sounds about right. Kyle, moving on to Sunday. Two great games. The first one, Rutgers 14, Ohio State 6, in a result that I don't think a lot of people saw coming.
Yeah, I feel like I was the only person on earth not surprised by this. And it's for one very simple reason. If you go back and look at tape from all of OSU's games, you see one very important characteristic. They score big goals from far out and using screens. Like, their shooter heat map is a jump shooter in the NBA in the mid-90s. Everything is two steps inside the line. They got away with scoring like that for half the season. But here's the thing. KJ Edelman eats distant shots like the IL staff eats Chipotle all day long.
Damn. IL staff called out. I've got some in my belly right now, Kyle. I really feel personally victimized by Kyle Devitt now.
Oh, my God.
Hey, it's Chipotle Monday. It's like a thing here.
For those of you that don't know, Chipotle has a location directly underneath the IL offices in the Inner Harbor in Baltimore.
Yeah. Kyle, you're right, though. Just watching Ohio State, they love the 15-yard bomb, especially from Trey LeClair. And I'm like, that's not going to work against Rutgers, whose strength is taking shots from outside. They're like, we want that. Please give us that. And without that, you know, without that strength, Ohio State looked a little lost. The only thing I was a bit surprised about here was how flat they seemed to come out, though. It's a conference game at home against an opponent who you know needs to beat you. You know they need to hit a home run in conference play. And they just couldn't seem to generate things when they really needed to. But Rutgers, they got off the bus looking like they knew what they needed to do, threw in a bit of a wrinkle by starting Ryan Gallagher on attack, which I actually thought was really important. And then they just did their thing. Like, Mullins and Sherrilyn Bidas were on fire early. And Rutgers defense played Ohio State very well. And you succinctly summarized that on Twitter during the game.
Yeah. This was my game to write up. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there, but wrote up from the broadcast. And I just think that Rutgers flat out outplayed Ohio State pretty much all over the field. The one thing that I think is a bright spot to look at for the Buckeyes is you saw that they outshot Rutgers by 10 shots. You know, like they did a great job of getting shots, but their location of those shots were not good. And also the execution at the end of the shot, there were so many bids that were fairly not high angle, but like medium angle on like kind of that side of the wing where a guy got an open look after they moved the ball around a couple times, but bounced it wide or whistled it wide. It looked like the scout on Edelman was put it away from him as far as you can. Now, I think that's what the OSU shooters were doing, but the ball just wasn't going in. If you look at it, just shots bouncing, that like it wore down the grass on the side of that far pipe. It really, like, if you go back and look, like you see dust by the fourth quarter on both sides. You know, they had so many shots. They did not can them. And they got, you know, outplayed when everything went slower. And also Rutgers, they're amazing at scoring in early offense and broken situations. And the scoreline could have been worse because they blew three wide open looks at the net. Blew it completely. So it could have been a lot worse, and it could have been a lot better for Ohio State. But I don't know if they win this just by the strength of that one medium wing shot that they kept setting up over and over and over and over and over.
Very well said, Kyle. All right. The game everybody has been waiting for us to talk about, Kyle. Number 3, Penn State, going down to College Park and beating number 1, Maryland, 13-10. Great atmosphere. And I hope it showed through on the broadcast. Quick aside, I really love Big Ten Network making Sunday night lacrosse a thing. It's been one of my favorite parts of the season the past three or so years, how long they've been doing it. It's just like, it's like watching an NFL game. Sunday night is the best time for like sports because everybody's at home. Everybody's got the Sunday scaries and they all want something to distract them. So like, oh, big game on Big Ten Network tonight. Couldn't have gotten any bigger with this matchup though. Game started out like it usually does for Penn State with a lot of offense, but holy cow, 8 goals is something else. And the scary part for outside observers is that Penn State mostly got it done without Grant Amen orchestrating every single play. He had 2 assists and was notably less active after he left the game in the second quarter.
So my thing is, I can't process how badly Maryland played in that first quarter. Like, it was shocking, a shocking display. They came out flat and they paid the price. So far this season, Maryland has done a great job of getting that early lead, and teams have had to spend their energy chipping away at that advantage to try and get a victory. It was an interesting hypothetical come to life. What happens when a team gets up on Maryland big early? And I think we saw that the thing that carried them was flat out desperation. You know what I mean? Like, they were taking shots that they would never take if they were up in a game or even up by 1 or 2 to try and get back. And that's good. I don't know if I would have expected that, but they were just like wild bids, wild shots, like spinning, like ninja kick shots. It was nuts.
Yeah. We knew Maryland was going to make the run. Like, I was filming the game from the sideline, and there's a few Penn State parents on the sideline that function as team photographers, and they just kept saying it throughout the game. It's a long game. And I knew they were right, and they were right, and Maryland made their run. I was actually kind of shocked that it got to 8-7. And Maryland got, like, the momentum-building goal of momentum-building goals. When your two-way midfielder absolutely hammers a high-to-high shot in transition, I'm like, oh boy, whole new ball game at this point. But I think if you're Penn State in that moment, you're kind of thinking to yourself, maybe can we really do this? Because you've never beaten Maryland in your history, according to some, and you've been snake bitten by this team the past few years in Big Ten play. And then they get a couple really important stops, and finally they break through with a goal from Cole Willard, who's on their second midfield, big momentum shifter right there. At that point, they knew they had been through the valley, and they were coming back up. And I think this Penn State team, with all the experience that they have, they want to display poise, and they showed that in this moment, getting their first victory over the Terrapins in their history.
So wait, what's the deal with that? Do we not have, like, records that they get the lost in the flood?
So the athletic records,
like,
I think, between Maryland and Penn State differ. So
how is that possible?
All I know is,
You know who's on the list? Those SIDs just got on the list retroactively. They're probably all dead.
Damn.
Sorry. I'm in a dark place,
so
Dan.
So is Penn State, should they be the unanimous number one, so to speak? Because I think they have to be, right?
I mean, they were, except for one vote, right?
I actually put Maryland at number two because I wanted to value this win highly for Penn State.
See, I put Loyola too.
See, I put Loyola at three.
I didn't feel,
even though they're like on, they're on like a bully mode right now. So, Kyle, let's talk about some other games from this past weekend. Let's go to the scoreboard. Also in the Big Ten, Hopkins 14, Michigan 8.
I feel like this ruins last week's Hopkins rant because this is a sneaky big win for the Birds, right?
Yeah, it was a win that they had to have to get back into the Big Ten tournament conversation. And I think it's probably being slept on because of Rutgers' big win. Because we're all of a sudden, oh, Rutgers is back in it now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much left to play. I saw people were doing like bracketology and stuff. And like, who do you think's going to win and get the AQ? And who's in that large? I'm like, it wasn't even April at that point. Like, you got to wait until at least the second week in April to do bracketology. I'm sorry. It doesn't make any sense. You got to have at least an idea of who can make the tournament in each conference before you start doing that. There's so much lacrosse left, and it's the games are only going to get better because these teams are getting more and more desperate. So if you're looking for upsets, they're coming. Don't worry.
Great. Kyle, Providence 8, St. John's 7 in overtime.
Hey, Friars, get one to drop. 17 saves from Tate Boyce. Providence is a team that has trouble closing games and closing teams out. And aside from the Hofstra game, hasn't been able to step on anyone's neck and get the points or the wins they need. 1-0 in the Big East right now. 4 conference games left. It's still do or die in P-Town, but this is a good win. St. John's is a good team. I know they've been sliding lately, but that's a good team to get a win against, especially in the conference.
Kyle, a notable result from the Ivy League. Brown 14, Princeton 10. Princeton pretty much undoing all the goodwill that they garnered after the Denver win with this very bad Ivy League loss.
Well, Dan, one of the running segments we have here on ITC is the wildly uneven season that Princeton's having and then blaming their defense for it. Sowers, I think we might switch it because Sowers only had 1-2 here. Very uncharacteristic against the Brown team that has let up double-digit goals in every single game they've played except for their 20-7 opener against Quinnipiac. Brown, sneaky 2-0, second place in the Ivy League behind Penn with a couple games left to play, obviously, for them, but kind of a big result for them.
Yeah, like I said, Princeton, like, great game against Denver. Absolutely show out on both sides of the ball. And then they just have this result. And it's just like, it's just really a head scratcher. It's like, what is this team? And they're on the outside looking in at the Ivy League tournament right now. They need help to get back in there. Man, that's just something, man.
It's just a bad season for them. I mean, we can say that now. I feel like, you know, I just said that you shouldn't get too excited about conference play, but like, this is not a good season if you're a Princeton fan. You're not thrilled. They're not getting results. I mean, getting a midweek win against Denver is great, but you got to do it when it counts.
To the Patriot League we go. Holy Cross 12, Navy 9. None of Bill Belichick's visiting Navy kind of helped them win this game, Kyle.
I mean, the Crusaders with the Patriot League shocker here. Navy goalkeeper Ryan Curran had to make 15 saves to make it even look close. Dan, what is happening in Annapolis right now? What's going on?
Man, I don't know. This Navy team has had an interesting trajectory this season. They start out really hot, and everybody was like, oh, can't sleep on Navy this year. And then they lose to Princeton. They lose to Loyola. You know, they just haven't seemed to really respond to some of the more elite offenses they're playing. And I actually think, like, I've seen a few Holy Cross games. Like, they have guys who can score. So I think the mids, they're looking for a little bit of an answer on the defensive end this season. They just haven't found it. This is a really important win for Holy Cross in the Patriot League. Kyle, to the neck. This is actually big one. The Mount, 14. Sacred Heart, 10.
Huge result in the NEC. I don't like calling it the neck. I feel like that's I know we've each been keeping an eye on kind of this conference a little bit each week is like the sneaky conference. You know, and by keep an eye on, I mean, we're not actually going to watch the game, but you know, we are aware of them. According to IL's own Tommy Lyons, also an alumnus of the Mount, Sacred Heart gave Mount St. Mary's a disproportionate amount of chances with sloppy play. And the Mount took those chances like the Grinch stole presents from Whoville.
Yeah.
And got out of there and won it big. I think, you know, if an alumnus is like Sacred Heart played bad and didn't pump up his team the school that he went to, I feel like I can trust that. That's good enough for me. But, you know, Mount, they got guys that can score. Christy Pertoro is no joke. I mean, he's out there. It's funny. You watch him play, and he was out there running. In the Richmond game that they won, the other big upset that Mount had a couple weeks ago, this dude ran from attack, chased a guy down on a break for Richmond, and jumping reverse ice-picked him in the stomach to stop the ball carrier and didn't get a penalty because Richmond called the timeout. It was the wildest play no one's ever going to talk about, but I was watching it and I was in the Slack talking to Tommy as I was watching it and being like, did you just see that? He's like, yeah, no flag. It was unreal. It was an unreal play, but unreal plays you know, you got to make your own luck. You got to make your own karma. And it feels like the Mount is doing that right about now. So,
Kyle, I can't believe you did not include Loyola's big win on this rundown.
Why?
Come on, man. I was telling my friends,
blowout, dude.
I was like, you won't believe what Loyola did to Colgate. They dropped 21 goals and two players have 10 points. Pat Spencer, 2 goals, 8 assists. Kevin Lindley, 8 goals, 2 assists.
Yeah. I'm just not surprised.
I know.
I'm sorry. I didn't put it in here on purpose. You're right.
I know, but I just could not fail to mention it. I was trying to like put that into regular sports terms for friends who are unfamiliar with lacrosse. I was like, this is like if Man City beat a team 8-1 and Aguero had 4 goals and assists and Sterling had 4 goals and assists.
See, to me, it's more like Tom Brady beating the Jets again.
Okay. You know? Well, that's actually, I think both are fair. Man City was probably playing like
it's not terrible.
Huddersfield Town. Sorry, Huddersfield Town. First team fair. Relegation. Sorry, guys. All right, Kyle. Weird watch of the week. This one actually started,
Dan.
I think, Tuesday or Wednesday last week. We had literally just recorded ITC, and I was like, all right, I already have our weird watch of the week next week. What is it, Kyle?
Yeah, you're going to lead this segment because I believe you watched a biopic of a terrible hairband on Netflix. Is this correct? And also, why did you do this to yourself? Tell everyone you did it for the listeners. Because I wouldn't do it.
Our weird watch of the week is the new Netflix Motley Crue biopic called The Dirt, based on a book, I believe, also called The Dirt. And quick aside, the reason I watched it is because I was, you know, chilling with my roommate, and he goes, ooh, look, Motley Crue biopic from Netflix. Like, do you want to watch it? And it's like, in the moment, like, I could tell he wanted to watch it. And you know what I thought? I was like, sometimes you just have to eat your pie with your roommates. They've watched me play a lot of Battlefield 5, getting shot out of the air in my Spitfire. And I'm like, you know what, man? Let's watch it. And we watched it together. And the whole time I'm like, this movie is preposterous. So how do I even begin, Kyle? All right. First of all, it stars Machine Gun Kelly as Motley Crue drummer Tommy Lee. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then I realize Mickey Mars is being played by Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones. I was like, this movie is preposterous. And then it just goes through their entire career together, the ups and downs. And also, like, you might need to just watch it for the portrayal of other rock stars. Like, they have a guy, like, legitimately play, like, Ozzy Osbourne. First of all, okay, I appreciate the effort here. Like, that kind of looks like Ozzy Osbourne. But, like, Ozzy's probably watching this and is, like, so mad that you're portraying him in this way. Like, it's like, I didn't do those things, but I probably definitely did. But, yeah, so I feel like for every, like, kind of sentimental, inspiring biopic, just like Bohemian Rhapsody, there's a movie like this where it's just, like, rock star debauchery. And it's just, like... Why was this movie made?
So wait, I got to ask you a question. What was I didn't watch this movie, but I know a little bit about Motley Crue because I worked for John Gelati, who was the firmware editor at Inside the Cross, who loves Motley Crue. Shout John Gelati. What did you do when you found out that Vince Neil killed the guy? How'd you feel?
I was like, that's pretty low. I was like, he's kind of a
yeah.
Can I say that? I don't.
Yeah. It's a bad dude. You cannot say that. You need to edit
it. I was like,
out.
Well, he's a jerk. Just bleep it.
Just
right.
Bleep it.
It's just like, oh, yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody, so inspiring. And then it's just like, I was like, wow, these guys just did as much drugs as they wanted and trashed as much as how many hotel rooms they could. Like, wow. But Kyle, man, I am so guilty. I've been listening to Motley Crue all week with my roommates. It's freaking bit me. It's just like See, this is how I know that Motley Crue wanted this movie made. They saw all the buzz Queen got after Bohemian Rhapsody. They're like, all right, put together a movie for us so that we can boost our record sales here in 2019. And it's totally working because everybody who's seen this movie has been listening to Motley Crue.
Okay, I'm going to turn this into a good thing. All right. So this movie, The Dirt, is off of a book written by Neil Strauss, right? A writer for Rolling Stone. Don't read that. Go to iTunes, go to the podcast app, and search for To Live and Die in LA. It's his podcast about a true crime investigation that happened in LA in 2018 that is still ongoing. It is the wildest podcast I have listened to since S-Town, which you can also go check that out. That is, if you haven't listened to that yet, it's more upsetting, I think, than To Live and Die in LA, but definitely check out To Live and Die in LA. It is, I tweeted about it earlier and like no one even looked at it. And I was like, all right, you're missing out, man. It's wild. It comes out every Friday. I think it's 8 chapters deep right now. It's not even close to over. So many twists and turns. Go check that out. And don't watch The Dirt. Like, do yourself a favor, right, Dan? Like, you're not going to recommend people watch this.
No, that's why I'm here doing this segment. And that's why I was so excited for it, is because usually you're the one who's like, people, I watched this movie so you don't have to.
Yes.
And that's where I'm in this boat right now. I'm like, I'm so glad I saw this movie just because I needed to see a bad movie and so I could tell other people not to watch
it. It's a lonely boat to be in because it's just you rowing trying to get through it, just trying to find land. And then the movie's over and you're like, why did I do that? But we do it because we get to tell you guys about it and you can laugh at us. And we can warn you not to do it. So you're well.
Kyle, let's move on to our dive rule debate. What do you have for me this week?
So this segment begins and ends with Penn and Yale's 3 overtime thriller. Anyone that watched this game saw wildly inconsistent calls for both sides. I don't think it was, you know, biased either way. And you know when refs are going nuts, when even the commentators are baffled by the decisions. And I don't mean in a way where they don't know the rules, which occasionally happens. I mean in a way where they're like, I don't know. You know, they like kind of have to stop their thought and wait for the refs to talk on the sideline and watch that video with everyone else. I feel like after a few weeks of calm, consistent calls, some adjustments, you know, we got some good lacrosse there. We got some good officiating of the dive rule. But we have a ref crew here that had an absolute shocker. And I'm going to tell you this right now. I've been saying this since the beginning, but this one really cemented it for me. I'm telling you, a conference championship or a playoff game is going to be decided by a bad dive call. You watch. I guarantee you that. Mark this down. First ITC of April, I'd say this. Watch it come true. I don't make a ton of predictions. This is my prediction. This is going to ruin a team's experience. Watch and wait. It's going to happen. Hopefully it doesn't happen to your team.
No, I agree. And that's actually something that was said during the Syracuse Notre Dame broadcast. And they're so right. They're like, we should change the rule right now. And I'm like, I'm not going to put up a fight there. Please do it. Kyle, time for our Tucker Dordovic play of the week. We have, you know, we have a lot of candidates this week, I feel like, as opposed to every other week.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pick 2 from the same game, the Penn State victory over Maryland. I think it's the spinning backhand finish from Jack Traynor early on, right? Like, that's my number one candidate. Do you have a better one?
From this game?
Just in general. I just feel like there are a ton of other candidates, you're right, but I think most of mine are from this game.
I have another one, but I'll let you implore the ones from this game first.
The other one from this game is actually from Danny Dolan, the Maryland goalkeeper, who threw a stick fake on his own end line that sent the cameraman spinning like he just got crossed up by Steph Curry. It was pretty incredible. Didn't really lead to anything spectacular, but wanted to shout it out. And, you know, imagine a world where I shout out Maryland twice in 1 week.
Yeah, that's a world we're living. So watching this game, I was not filming when Danny Dolan did this. And like, I wasn't even watching the game. I was like doing something else. And you just hear this audible reaction from the crowd, like, ho ho. And I'm like, oh no, what did I miss? What did I miss? And I was like, oh man, did the goalie like cross somebody up? Did he like toe drag somebody?
It was better.
So I got to go back and watch this tape and see what I missed. Cause instantly I was like, dang it. I really missed something awesome. Didn't I?
It's the best goalie fake I've ever seen.
Wow.
Seriously.
High praise.
Ever.
The only other play that I wanted to shout out was the Tyler Dunn equalizer. I feel like that was pretty spectacular.
Yes.
Cause he literally like shoots through the defender. He's like, I just need to get this on cage. And it's almost like a miraculous shot that just goes in. Right.
You're not wrong.
And like I said,
you're
it was
wrong.
A shooter's goal.
Yeah.
He's like, we just got to have it. And he gets it. No time remaining. Pretty impressive. All right.
We
Kyle,
made it.
That's our
it.
Show. We did it. We were so like this morning. We're like, oh man, we're never going to make it through the podcast.
Too much stuff happened.
Here we
man.
Are. We even talked about Motley Crue for like 5 minutes. And his head didn't explode.
Man, thank you guys for listening. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah. Also, I really can't believe it's April. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking conference championships in a month here. That's nuts. I can't believe we're at that point in the season. And we appreciate everybody who's been along for the ride so far this season. If you like the podcast and you know somebody who's looking for a lacrosse podcast, please recommend us. Please leave a rating as well. You can find me on Twitter at Dan_Abern. Kyle, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheKyleDevitt. Anytime you feel like it.
All right, guys. Thanks for the listen. We will see you next week when we yeet this week.
What? What happened? What'd you do? Yeah.